Good evening.
Good evening.
Our first order of business is a public hearing on Local Law B of 2013, overriding the tax levy limit for 2014. Would anyone like to address the legislature on that law? Hearing none, I'll close the public hearing and open the legislature meeting for June 4th, 2013. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Chalk, I'm here. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And we are at public privilege of the floor. I have Reverend Christina Culver, Loaves and Fishes. You address the legislature. Welcome.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to say a few words to you. On behalf of the Loaves and Fishes of Tompkins County, I'm the executive director, again, Reverend Christina Culver. And first of all, I'd like to thank the legislature for your ongoing support for our free meal and advocacy program. Our county has been very generous to Loaves and Fishes and also the surrounding food pantries. And I understand it's not a given that counties will support food programs such as these. So again, thank you very much. I just want to share with you what's going on at Loaves and Fishes to date. We have been in existence, as most of you know, for now 30 years. We provide a free meal Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, lunch Tuesday and Thursday, evenings dinner. But we've always tried to cultivate a very loving, supportive, and welcoming community. Our mission is to provide a place for a free meal, companionship, hospitality, and advocacy to those in need, regardless of faith, beliefs, or circumstances. We not only serve a free meal. People come for the community. People come for companionship, and that's very important because many of our people in need lead extremely lonely lives, and they often fall through the cracks in terms of services or anyone at all becoming aware of basic unmet needs that they may have. So in our program, we've always provided advocacy to our guests when we learn that they do have unmet basic need. We do our best to link them with existing social services in our community. We regularly have over 30 social service agencies doing direct outreach during our mealtime for our guests. Since 2010, we witnessed or experienced a huge jump and the number of meals that we're serving. Between 2010 and 11, we served 4,000 more meals, and I'm not including seconds. We've been building steadily on that number. So if you compare 2010 to 2012, we're serving over 5,000 people. If you compare our this monthly period between January and May, this time last year, we're already serving 450 more people. So unfortunately, the need is continuing for our free meal and advocacy program. Last year, we served over 37,000 meals, and we regularly serve over 3,000 meals each month. The miracle of it all is we do this with the help of 25 to 30 community volunteers each day. We have a very small staff. I'm the only one that's full-time, and my time is up. I do have handouts. I'm not sure how to give that to you, but I do invite you to please check out our film on the website, loaves.org. It gives you a great overview of what we do. Thank you again for your support and for this time to address you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? Okay. Thank you. Any municipal official? Welcome, Dan.
Thank you. I'm Dan Klein from the town of Danby. I wanted to let you know, in case you didn't know, that the town board signed a contract with Liberty Solar several months ago, and we just had our solar panels installed at the town hall. So it's not operational yet. It's supposed to be operational this month. It's a 21-kilowatt system, and there was no cost to taxpayers. There was no money required up front. We will be paying a monthly fee to Liberty Solar, and that fee is guaranteed to be less than the cost of the energy that we're saving. So there will be no cost. In fact, there will be a savings to taxpayers. This is the same company that the county used for several of the county buildings. It's the same company that Solarized Tompkins is using for part of their contract with individual homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan. Any questions for Dan? Peter?
Yes.
Is there any competition in the people that provide solars? I noticed that you listed several local municipalities that use them. Is this a hotly contested private enterprise to try to get people to use them or not?
Well, they claim to be the largest solar installer in New York State. And I'm not really aware of other companies that are leasing solar panels. And that's the beauty of the thing, that there was no upfront cost. So there may be other companies doing this, but they're certainly the biggest, and we didn't get bids from anybody else.
Carol?
Yeah, I can answer that if you'd like. I know that the Solarized Tompkins Southeast people interviewed 10 potential providers. The advantage of Solar Liberty, I believe, is that they make some of their panels in Buffalo, so that's a nice choice, especially if you're government. It's a nice choice for everybody. Some of those providers do electric exclusively, and some may do hot water exclusively, and some may do both. But I know that there were 10 that they interviewed and chose two. I don't know if others are doing the government arrangement or not.
Thank you, Carol. Frank?
Dan, when we attended the Solarized Tompkins out in Caroline, there were two individuals that represented installation companies. The second one, whose name Carol may remember because she was there. Renovus was the second one.
Liberty Solar is the other company.
The other one. He described to us that the panels that were being manufactured were being imported from Europe because they last longer. Do you know which panels the town of Danby is? There was less maintenance on the imported ones than on the ones made in the U.S.
I don't know which ones we end up getting. I do know that as a lease, the company is responsible for the maintenance of it, so we don't even have to put any effort in that way.
Thanks.
And I just want to say that I had the honor of walking in the Ithaca Festival Parade in front of Dan. He was on his stilts. I was on the ground. And I want to learn how to do that.
that's on the record, I hope.
It's on the record, you bet. Will?
Thank you, Martha. Actually, I had another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I had a question on another topic
For Dan?
For legislative privilege of the floor. I jumped the gun.
Oh, okay. All right. Anything else for Dan? Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Will?
Thank you. I actually was wanting to build on Reverend Culver's statements about loaves and fishes. I used to have the pleasure of volunteering down there, and maybe am I right that people are still, anybody is welcome to come?
Absolutely. And, all are welcome. There's absolutely no eligibility requirements either to come in for a meal or to volunteer, essentially. I mean, we have our certain codes of conduct, basic common sense things, but that does distinguish us from most community kitchens in the country, that we don't ask to prove need or residence.
And from my memory, it was actually encouraging members of the community that weren't necessarily desperate for food, but just wanted to come out and be part of a really nice community institution.
Yes, exactly. Located downtown. Sorry, go ahead.
So it's like lunches, what, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then dinners Tuesday and Thursday?
Correct. Right? Not much has changed in the 30 years except our numbers, I would say. And we've developed and grown our advocacy program. And if you don't mind me indulging this moment, you know how you sit down and always wish you had mentioned something. I'm very happy to share with you that, if you haven't heard, that J.R. Claiborne is our outreach coordinator, who has been with us nearly a year now, to do specific outreach to the Black community. And we're very grateful to the Park Foundation to support his position. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday lunch and dinner, and Tuesday and Thursday.
Okay. And by the way, it's really, really good food. That was the other thing. I mean, it's
yeah.
Like,
please come. We buck all the stereotypes of the soup kitchen.
Yeah.
The kitchen managers that oversee the volunteers, not exaggerating one bit, are both gourmet cooks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other legislative privilege? Carol?
Yeah, I believe I mentioned last time that I had attended a session in New York City about radon, the potential for radon and gas in New York City. Did I give details about that? Because since we have time tonight, if you're interested, I would read you some of the materials that they handed out, just how serious this problem is. And, you know, I attended this because I was interested in the fact that people in New York City were interested in the problem of hydrofracking and where their gas was going to come from. As I came home and reflected upon this and read it, I realized that this is an issue for us right here in Ithaca. It's just, if we weren't already convinced that hydrofracked gas is not good for us. It's not only a question of whether there is fracking in New York State. It is a question of what kind of gas we'll be burning in our own kitchens. So here's some information. Radon, we know, is a tasteless, odorless, colorless, but radioactive gas. It has a half-life of 3.8 days, which means that 3.8 days from now, you know, you'll have half the level in 3.8 days, but it's still radioactive forever. The question is, what level of radioactivity does it have when it's burned in your house? It is the second leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. The leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers and the second leading cause among smokers. And you get this, the danger to your body is primarily from inhalation. It's present in all natural gas, but usually at levels from traditional gas, it tends to be at levels of below 1 picocurie per liter, which is how it's measured. Around here, we're aware when we sell our houses or test our houses that we want to stay below the EPA recommended levels of 4 picocuries per liter. If your level is above that, you have to have your house treated, or it's recommended that you do. That's the EPA recommended level. It turns out the World Health Organization, I don't know where that figure is, it's less than half that the World Health Organization actually recommends that you stay below. But in the U.S., the 4 picocuries per liter is acceptable. A 2012 survey by the USGS found that the median radon level in the Marcellus was about 37 picocuries per liter, with the highest level that they found was 79 picocuries per liter. at 79 or even at 37, you need a lot of half-lives, a lot of 3.8 dayses, for that level to come down. And if you're getting gas from Louisiana or Texas, which is where our gas comes from now primarily, first of all, their levels start out at only 5 picocuries per liter. If you're getting it right there, you might have some concerns. That's over the 4. But by the time it gets here and takes, I think it's about 8 days to get here, it's not a concern. But if it's coming from the Marcellus, if it's coming, for example, from Bradford County or areas just south of the border to us, at levels of 37 to 79 picocuries per liter, it's not something we want to be burning in our kitchens or in our homes. There's a bill that's been introduced to the legislature, Assembly 6863, and the Senate Bill 4921, sponsored by some New York City legislators, Linda Rosenthal in the Assembly and Diane Savino from Staten Island in the Senate, that would require gas to be tested at entry points to New York State. So it is something that I think that we ought to encourage our representatives to support. I did call over to Barbara Lipton's office this morning, and they looked into it, and she literally signed up, I think, in the last few days to that bill. And I haven't contacted the others yet, but I wanted you guys to have these figures that it is, the transit time from the Marcellus to the New York City metro area is only 15 to 20 hours, so I'm assuming that's either the same or less to us. So it is something, I don't know what we should do about it. I think we should maybe ask our health department to be letting people know this is something they might want to watch out for, that we might want to start testing for as gas from the Marcellus starts to make its way around.
Well, I've got you on the list, okay, Frank? Let me go to Mike. And then you're next. Then Jim.
Memorial Day was a splendid day weather-wise in Tompkins County, and there were Memorial Day ceremonies throughout our communities. Probably the largest is in Dryden, where the veterans sponsor the parade on Memorial Day. And we had a great turnout for that. We had our Dryden band, with the most young people I can remember being in that. We had Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. We had members of the military from the American Legion Memorial Home. We had the veterans from Vietnam. Frank Proto was a member marching. There were folks that have served in the National Guard from the Afghanistani and Iraqi conflicts. It was a very, very moving ceremony, and it did something that I hadn't seen done before at one of these ceremonies. Instead of having a guest speaker this time, the Master of Ceremonies opened it up to the crowd to step up and thank someone, a veteran, and probably a half dozen people took advantage of that and spoke for maybe a minute each. And afterwards, many members of the crowd mentioned how different and particularly moving that was to hear from people thanking people who had died, their parents, thanking people who are in service now, for example. So I just wanted to tell you about that. And also remind you, Dryden, not to be outdone as far as the parade goes, is this Saturday is Dryden Dairy Day. And Dryden Dairy Day, we'll have a parade at 9:30 on Saturday, provided it doesn't storm too bad. And there'll be festivities at Dryden's Montgomery Park. In the parade, of course, will be the Dairy Princess and her court. The Dairy Princess was just selected at a banquet last week, and they generally make a giant ice cream sundae and do other things to educate people about the dairy industry, which is important in Dryden and throughout Tompkins County. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. I got Frank, Jim, Dooley, Pam, and Leslie. Okay.
Thanks, Martha. Mike, I think you said it all. I was just going to thank you and the folks in Dryden for the Memorial Day Parade. It was everything you just described. And we were very well received. And the new mayor seemed like a real nice guy. So thanks. But I had a question with regard to something Carol just mentioned about radon. Maybe this may sound facetious, but you asked if the health department might step up and do some of the testing. Is there some funding that might go with that, or is this the first blow of the health department having to step up and do testing under the fracking scenario that we've all been so worried about?
Well, I came home from this thing and bought myself a radon test kit. It cost $10.
The health department, you know, provides those already. And they do radon. They will test if you ask. But I was just curious if maybe you brought some money back with you from this so we could reimburse the health department. A simple yes would be great.
I'm happy to ante up $10 for... To contribute to the health department, Frank.
That's a good point.
Thanks,
all right.
That's it.
Thanks, Frank. Jim?
No, thank you. I'm fine. I'm just
okay.
Holding my head.
Dooley, Pam, Leslie, and Peter.
I hadn't tested my house for a number of years, and a couple of months ago, Cooperative Extension was advertising for people to show up at their radon information sessions, and they had a grant with free test kits from the state, so I did that. And everything Carol said is something to be taken seriously, but Cooperative Extension can put you in touch with the health department if you want to pursue it that way. I didn't realize our county department tested on call and did it free. That is news to me. Is that what you said?
That's what I understand.
Hmm. Okay.
Or they might refer you to Cooperative Extension.
The state does not do it for free.
No, the state doesn't.
So what I had planned to talk about was just to acknowledge that today is the first day of the Bradley Manning trial. Bradley Manning is 25 years old now. He was 22 when he released a bunch of documents that our government had classified. He apparently called the, I can't remember which federal agency, to ask if they would like to check what he was releasing to make sure that none of them would put anyone in harm's way, as the phrase goes. They declined to review what he wanted to release. He had already selected a subset that he felt would not do any damage but would inform the American people about our actions in other countries. So it's amazing to me that our government is trying to prove that he has aided the enemy, and the way they hope to do that is by showing that he gave these documents to the New York Times. He offered them to the Times, the Washington Post, and so forth. And what that means, if the government were to succeed in proving that by so doing, he deserves life in prison for helping terrorists, would mean that anybody who has anything printed in our news media could also be charged with treason. And that's crazy. So this trial will probably take a month, and I hope that we all pay attention to it. It's a terrible embarrassment, as far as I'm concerned, that this is what we're doing.
Thank you, Julie. Pam?
Yes, I'd just like to make a suggestion for future reference, is that when we have somebody come and speak to us who is from a group, for example, Reverend Carver, or at another time, I believe Reverend Wright spoke. And in both situations, I feel that they are representing a group of people, and that we should be treating those people differently than an individual just standing up and speaking. And I know that Reverend Bright wasn't able to finish his presentation, and I think that's too bad. So I know that when I was on Common Council, we introduced the idea of having somebody who they would be representing other people who would speak on behalf of them, and they were given an extra minute or two. I don't remember how much, but surely we should be making some kind of allowance for people who are representing a group. And I would hope that, I don't know if that's the GO committee or whoever it is, that that would be taken under consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Do you mean, I mean, representing 10 neighbors, is that the same as representing an agency? I mean,
well, that's to be discussed. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you have to have a certain number of people or if it has to be a organization that's listed in some directory. I don't know. But it just seems that we should think about that and think of expanding that time for people who are representing groups.
Right. And, I you know, that's one reason that I obviously allowed the Reverend to add some more comments, and I, because it does matter when we have a lot of people here and a long agenda. So I think it's certainly to be taken into consideration. Thank you, Pam. Leslin?
Thank you, Pam. That's not what I intended to say, but I'm glad you brought that up. I was thinking about it when, like, the Human Services Coalition brings with agencies to think about that. And before Reverend Culver leaves, I do want to indulge her one more time. Because I don't have my calendar in front of me and I don't have the dates right. If she remembers when the next U2O viewing is, the one that you all are doing in conjunction with GIEC and Green Star, if you can say when those dates are and time.
I would love to.
There it is.
Okay. So if you haven't had a chance to see the film, you have another chance beginning this tomorrow. Wednesday, it'll be showing at GIAC in collaboration with Green Star and Loaves and Fishes. The program starts, including dinner, at 5:30, and at 6:15 we'll have, or 6 o'clock we'll have introductions. We'll start the film at 6. 6 o'clock we'll have introductions. 6:15 we start the movie, and then we'll have 45 minutes of facilitated discussion following, and child care is provided. And we'll be showing the second part of that film, The Story We Tell, June 12th, and the third part, The House We Live In, on June 19th. All are Wednesday evenings, and this all together will, we're showing it, Race, the Power of Illusion. And we just Thank finished you. A showing also. So the more, this gives you more options to view it. Thank you, Leslin.
Thank you. I just don't have the date. I could have said yesterday, tomorrow, but I couldn't remember the rest of them. At any rate, the other thing I want to mention, Mike always with Dryden Dairy Days reminds me that this Saturday is the annual GIEC Festival as well. We sort of overlap, so you're all invited to come down. Last year, the county was well represented and very supportive of what we did. And we can't go backwards, so this year we're upping the ante. So come on out and celebrate with us as we celebrate doing small things in a great way. This past week, as you all know, the Second Ward in downtown Ithaca and Stewart Park was all abuzz with the Ithaca Festival. Congrats to the Ithaca Festival folks for another successful event. I know everyone was wondering, how is this going to happen with the Commons not being available, but it happened and happened well. And so I just want to say a big old shout out and thank you to everyone who was involved in pulling it together. All the logistics, especially given that the Commons was not available, and making it happen in fine form for Ithaca. So thank you. Those are the things I wanted to mention.
Okay. All set? Thank you.
That's it.
Peter.
Yeah, I'd like to share an experience that I found very moving, both personally and as an American, that happened to me yesterday. So yesterday I was in Washington, D.C., and I was there to celebrate the high school graduation of our grandson, Irene and my grandson. He lives in Montgomery County, Maryland, and the graduation ceremony was held in a building in Washington that I knew about and had often seen called Constitution Hall. But I'd never been in it before. And Constitution Hall, that was probably the first thing I ever was aware of that had some political significance in my lifetime. I must have been, I don't know, 6 years old or something like that when there was an event that was hotly discussed in my family. And the event was that in Constitution Hall, which is owned by probably the most elite women's organization then and probably today still in the United States, the DAR, the Daughters of the American Revolution. And Constitution Hall was a performance hall. They rented out to people to make money. And at that time, a very well-known singer in the United States, a female singer named Marian Anderson, had rented Constitution Hall to give a concert. I believe it was a free concert. And Marian Anderson, in case you don't know, was a singer who sang a whole range of music from operatic arias to pop to gospel. She was black. And she was very famous and very wealthy, I'm sure, because she gave concerts all the time. And the Daughters of the American Revolution met about this and decided that it would sully the reputation of their hall to allow a black person to sing there. And so they revoked the permit and they said she could not sing there. And then a nice thing happened. One of the great heroes of my household was the President of the United States' wife, Eleanor Roosevelt. And Eleanor Roosevelt was, in fact, a member of the DAR. She came from a very long aristocratic New York family. And she immediately, publicly, renounced her membership in the DAR and also persuaded her husband to schedule a concert for Marian Anderson on the Mall, which was attended by 10,000 people, and the DAR came out looking not so good. So that was the event. Well, when I'd never been in Constitution Hall before. It's beautiful. It's a gorgeous hall. And, you know, this was when I was 6 years old. The black person probably couldn't even come in there except to clean it. And so my grandson's graduation took place there. It was a large high school. There were some 700 students who were getting their diplomas. Imagine sitting through 700 readings of a name and applause, but we did that. But what absolutely amazed me was the sight that I saw in this beautiful hall. When I came in, by the way, the students had not arrived, but there was an orchestra. The school orchestra was on the podium, and I looked at that and I thought, what is this? Because as near as I could tell, every player in the school orchestra was Asian. And I put on my glasses and looked before, and I decided, nope, I don't understand this. But every student, as near as I could tell, was Asian. And then the students came down, one by one, and I have never seen a more diverse and representative group of Americans than I saw yesterday. And my son is a teacher there, and afterwards I said, do you have any idea what the demographics of Blair High School are? He said, yeah. He said, it's a quarter white, a quarter Asian, a quarter Latino, a quarter black. And that's what I saw when I saw them walking down there. And it was just a beautiful sight. And I thought that's quite a change in one person's lifetime between it's a very different America than it was in 1936. And nobody blinks an eye. We just accept it. It's a tremendous accomplishment, and I was very moved by it.
Thank you very much, Peter. And congratulations. And you're, because I'm sure the grandparents had everything to do with the graduation.
What?
Congratulations. Grandparents have everything to do with the graduation accomplishment.
Oh, I tell you, there were more proud grandparents sitting around me that just busting with pride. Yeah. It's a great feeling.
Good. Terrific. Anyone else? All right. Thank you. My report, just a couple things. The Regional Economic Development Council schedule is wakening up a little bit. There hasn't been much going on this year so far, but next Thursday the work group meetings are taking place, and we have a lot of folks from Tompkins County in those different work groups. I'm part of the energy work group, so I'll be going down there on Thursday morning for that. Leading up to June 27th is the next meeting of the full council, and the process for the next round of CFAs, Consolidated Funding Applications, for money under the regional council process. The deadline will be in July, and I don't have the exact date yet, but people who have been thinking that it's they'd like to put in an application, I'm talking to not just legislators here, but members of the public, you should start thinking ahead towards a July date. And if you go into the website, if you can just type in the New York Regional Councils, you'll be able to get the information online. Related to economic development, there's been a lot of conversation this week about the governor's proposal about tax-free zones in and around colleges, universities, and community colleges. So I've been in a couple of those conversations. Heard from Michael Stamm, for example, that there's a bit of consternation. He pointed out that the governor hadn't actually talked to economic development professionals before he made the proposal. I think it's the sort of thing I saw in the news that President Skorton was one of the spokespeople supporting the proposal. I'm sure everybody wants to be in the mix if this is going to happen, and I certainly hope that our institutions are in the mix and our entrepreneurs locally can take advantage. But I think it is something that looks a lot like the Empire Zone program before it was improved, and I don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see. So just thought I'd point out an issue that we've been talking about among staff. So that is my report, unless there are no questions. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. We're running ahead of time, and it looks like you have a short agenda, so I thought I'd take tonight to explain the GASB 45 regulation that covers the accrual of post-retirement health benefits. If you don't mind that I read from this section.
I'm happy to explain GASB. I'm so on the GASB, man.
You want to move in adjournment? We can move in adjournment.
So I just have a few things tonight, mostly in the way of updates. First, just some good things. I want to introduce a young man who's working in our office over the summer as an intern, working most closely with Paula Younger. Saul Schuster is here with us tonight to observe the legislature. Saul is a senior at Cornell. His family is from Rochester. And again, he'll be working with Paula over the course of the summer, mostly on the grants management project, to move that farther along. And you know that was a system that Paula developed a year or two ago. So we wanted to welcome him here tonight. Also kind of just a reminder, there's the 25-year award dinner is this Thursday. If you're able to attend, it's a nice event. It's a great way of saying thanks to people who have devoted 25 years of their lives to the county. It's Thursday evening at Lake Watch. I'm sure if you want to go, they'll find a way to get you in. So just connect with the personnel department if you have an interest in doing that. I think we have over a dozen people who will receive awards this year. The state legislature is nearing adjournment. It looks like they're going to adjourn around the 20th of this month. And I just wanted to run one thing by you. As the days tick down in session, sometimes things arise on the legislative calendar that may be important to us. And maybe we want to weigh in, but there's not time between what they're doing and your next meeting. There's an example right now where the Assembly has introduced legislation that on its face looks pretty good, that would restore most, if not all, of the money that was cut for OPWDD programs. You recall that discussion. It affects Challenge and Unity House and the Racker Center and us. So it looks good, but we kind of want to get it under the microscope, see if there's a Senate bill. And if we find that there is legislation that is coming about at kind of the last minute in Albany, my suggestion is that we review that legislation with Martha as chair, with the chair of the appropriate program committee, in this case it would be Frank, with the department head who has the greatest knowledge of this. And if it looks like this is something worthy of our support, then a letter would go out, probably signed by the program committee chair and the chair of the legislature, indicating our support for that particular legislation. It's a way of fast-tracking support for things that look like they may be in our interest. So if that's an approach that works for folks, and we could certainly get this out on emails and things so everyone knows what's going on, but I think, again, this one in particular looks pretty interesting. If there's a Senate companion, and if it stands up, we may want to weigh in quickly before we lose the legislative session. And we can come back to that later if you'd like. I've been keeping you posted on the livable wage work group. That group has met weekly for the last 7 weeks, and thanks to everybody who's been involved in that. I think we're inching toward a consensus. Either that or we have 9 of the most polite people in county government. It seems like we're getting to a place where there'll be some recommendations that we can issue to the legislature, and then, for the lack of a more graceful term, the ball will be in your court. But I do think we're reaching a pretty good place in terms of how to approach a resolution that was passed back in 2003 regarding living wage. We're taking this week off. We're coming back next week to have our 8th meeting. I am expecting that we'll be able to bring things to closure or pretty close to closure at that meeting. We'll then take another break while a report is written. Then the group will come back, look at the report, and hopefully endorse that report and bring it forward to you. So that's moving along, and again, a tremendous time commitment on the part of a lot of people in moving that forward. The last thing in my notes, the audit of the Health Benefits Consortium is now out for 2012. It reported very strong finances, good financial performance in 2012. So the consortium has met and exceeded its reserve requirements. It's on a very stable fiscal footing, which is really important for an entity that's only 2 years old and took 1 year to kind of build its reserves. And again, as the auditors have indicated, it's in very strong financial shape now. So I think those were all the things on my list, unless you want to come back to GASB 45, in which case that's why both David and Rick are here tonight to help me out with that, too.
Thank you, Joe. Dooley, Jim, Frank.
When is the 8th meeting of the Livable Wage Group?
Is it next Thursday?
Next Thursday.
I think it's next Thursday at 2:30.
Yeah. This coming Thursday?
Day.
A week from.
A week from Thursday.
Jim?
I think Frank's for me.
Go ahead.
Mortgage tax, is that DOA?
Well, I don't know. I was going to let Pam talk about it. There's a letter, an op-ed piece that has been drafted. I did talk to the NYSAC folks. I went to a county administrators meeting on Friday and have exchanged emails since that time. I know that NYSAC is advocating on our behalf. I've gotten a couple of things from them over the last 2 days asking us to keep parsing out how are we different than just a request to raise taxes. So I know they've engaged some conversations there. Pam, I don't know if you want to talk about that.
I don't have anything in particular to add. I mean, I know that I had been in contact with UAW, who represents the with TCAT employees, and this was actually Joe's idea, which was an excellent idea. And they have a lobbyist in Albany, and he helped. He sent out a bunch of letters and talked to some people. So I think that we've been pushing in sort of an unusual kind of way, but it's sort of an odd thing to be pushing for. I mean, it's hard for we now are going to try. And Martha, I think, had a good idea of putting some notices on the buses about this, and perhaps some riders who have a real interest in this program might be willing to step up and and to help carry the water on this. But I think that there is some support. I just don't know how broad it is and how far.
Process-wise, I checked earlier today. This is moving along process-wise, so it's really in the same place that our sales tax extension is in right now, in terms of committees that it's gone through and where it is. So, you know, it's moving the way it should. As you know, when it hits the leadership level, that's where we've had problems in the different variation of the mortgage tax we've talked about before.
I've spoken with people in Senator Klein's and Senator Savino's office and with Barbara Lifton's staff. I've left messages in Senator Skelos' office and several messages and not gotten a return call. So I just made a note to do another round of those. I think the idea of consumers, of the bus riders making, you know, you'd be surprised how just a few of those calls could make a difference. So thanks, Pam. Thanks, Joe. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Joe, I got a couple of things for you, but on the on the MPO, am I hearing that it would be timely for some of us to make another round of calls?
On the mortgage tax? Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The COPS item, mm-hmm. Does the bill, we were not sure when we were talking about this before, but does the proposed bill restore all of the money to
that's
us?
That's what I can't tell at this point. Susan Romanchik is looking at it. This would restore up to $90 million of funding for OPWDD programs. And in terms of where that hits, what it affects positively, that's what I mean. We really need to put this under the microscope and understand what it means.
Yeah, because the hit to us, if I remember right, was about $500,000. $300 or so in adult and $175 or $200 in children. So
that may actually be reversed. I think the greater hit, and this is really concerning, is in the kids, the day treatment for young people.
Okay.
That's the bigger hit.
The other two, I just wanted to ask. First, is there any update on AES Cayuga and what's going on up there?
Other than what was reported several weeks ago, no, not that I'm aware of.
And last year, we approved the Smart Work program.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had various departments go through it and tweak things and become more efficient. Should we receive some sort of an update on how some of the implementation of some of those things are paying off?
Jackie Thomas presented, must have been at the budget committee. I'm not sure if we did GO and budget.
Yes,
just budget. To give a recap of what we've done, and it's a really good presentation. So if you'd like something done here, we could do that just to post you. Yeah, there's a lot to be proud of there in terms of what has been accomplished, and we're continuing to do smart work.
I know that the one that you heard, the DSS one, was about the work at home one. But I know the health department went through one, a couple of, and COFA, yeah. I think, went through one. Yeah. Is it, at some point, can the ones that apply to the health committee, can we get some update?
Sure.
Perhaps the other committees are interested.
Sure.
In that?
Absolutely. What I can do tomorrow, I can send all of you the PowerPoint that personnel prepared and presented to budget. It'll give you a snapshot of what's been done, and if you'd like segments of that presented in program committees.
Will you do the presentation?
If you want me to, sure. But we can do that, and again, I guess, Frank, the only clarification I would give you, the work from home was not a smart
that
work.
Was
that
not
was
a
an
smart
internal work group,
right.
And then DSS picked it up. But the others that you're recalling all were, and there are several on that list. So I'd be happy to share that in the program committees.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Gatsby postponed till next time, or what?
I'm always ready to talk about Gatsby. So.
We've got Peter, Jim, Pat, and Pam.
No, I've already spoken.
I thought you had a question about maybe about the mortgage recording tax. I thought you.
Oh yeah, I did actually. Thank you. Yeah. I wonder, have we had any direct feedback from the Senate about this or not? Do we have any idea as to whether they're leaning towards supporting it or not?
Pam, you want to take it?
Well, I had a fairly long conversation with Tom O'Mara about this, and while I believe that he actually supports this, he supports public transportation and using money for this, he was skeptical of the leadership because it's, you know, mortgage recording tax. They in their minds, I'm not sure that they are differentiating between them actually passing a mortgage recording tax increase and them passing what we are asking them to do, which is just to pass dedicating that money to public transportation. So I think it's people are just skittish about these, about increasing any taxes. And I think the Democrats have some of that, but not as strongly as the Republicans do.
Peter?
Well, then, it seems to me that we ought to aim with a high-power rifle at the people who are making that decision to explain to them, not arguing with them, but to explain to them the reality of it and what they're doing and what they're not doing. I mean, if we're going to be defeated based on the fact that they don't know what they're signing, then that is really too bad. You know, it's one thing to change someone's mind when you both understand what's going on, but when you don't understand what's going on, there's a real opportunity. I have no idea how to exploit that.
Right. Well,
but if that's, you know, if that's the problem,
yeah,
somehow we ought to think
right
about how we can tell them the truth, so to speak.
Right. Well, may I follow up here? I'm not completely sure that they don't understand. I think that they just see that those words, mortgage recording tax, you know, increase, mm-hmm, and I think that it they dismiss it because even they see it as a fine distinction. Obviously, we don't, and I don't think it is. It's a very big difference. But I think, and perhaps they're using, that's just an excuse for them not to pass this. I don't really know what's behind it. But, I mean, I think it's always good to lobby them and talk to them and explain our position. But Joe has put together some really precise, clear language and memos and that have been handed through. And I know that O'Mara understands it and is able to explain it. So, I think that it's the political piece. It's the making it possible for them to pass it that we are facing, and that's pushing, and that's getting constituents to speak up.
It is not just a passive lack of understanding.
Right.
The Realtors Association is actively lobbying very hard.
Right.
But you certainly know the phrase in politics, perception is reality. It doesn't matter what the reality is. It is believed that the public will see this as a tax increase.
That's right.
So I think I have Jim next.
Yes, thank you. I believe we should change the name to mortgage fee enhancement and see how that flies. And also, all due respect, Peter, I don't think we should be aiming any high-powered rifles at anyone at this particular point. You know, so just let me weigh in on that. I think email and text messaging will do.
It wasn't assault weapons, I think.
Right. You know, okay.
Pat?
I just wanted to mention in response to Frank's question, I wanted to let you know that at the last GO meeting, we had a very thorough report from the Social Service Department on the work-from-home program, and I had planned to mention that in my report tonight.
Thanks. Thank you.
Pam, I've got you down here again. Was there anything?
I have a quick thing.
Yeah.
And it has to do with, I just would hope everybody would, there's a series in the New York Times, it started on Sunday, and it has to do with our health care system in this country and what what has happened with the healthcare system and why we see, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars in differences in costs from one part of the country to another, from procedure to procedure, that it is a system that is broken. And I had never really understood this, and I would encourage anybody, because I don't know that much about our healthcare system, and this was a great, interesting primer in terms of how it actually works, and I would encourage anybody to read those.
Thank you, ma'am. Carol?
Sorry, this was a question for Joe, but I don't want to... You mentioned creating a scenario where the chair of the committee and the chair of the legislature would be free to weigh in on legislation. Were you talking in general, or you're talking about a specific piece of legislation?
Well, it was the specific instance here of the OPWDD item that led me to think, what if there are things that arise between now and your next meeting, because they will be out of session on the 20th, and you next meet on the 18th. So what should we do if something arises that we think is worth supporting? So that's why I've suggested maybe there's a fast-track approach that allows input by, you know, some folks who have expertise in this, including the department and the program chair and the chair and so forth. And if everybody agrees that this is worth supporting, at that point a letter would go out that could be signed by the chair and by the program committee chair in support of that piece, or in opposition to a piece of legislation that would harm us.
Yeah, I mean, if it were about specific legislation, you know, about our finances, that I would feel okay about that.
That's what he's talking about.
If it's just a blanket.
No, he's talking about...
So you're speaking for the legislature without having... Okay.
Yeah, this would be an example. So it's OPWDD. Okay. It could be the restoration of a significant amount of money. It would be nice to be able to say, we really like this. This would be important for Tompkins County. But in terms of a formal resolution by this body, if you're not going to meet until the 18th, they're going home on the 20th. We may miss the moment. That's
what he's talking about, a specific piece of legislation.
Specific, that would be okay with me. I just wasn't sure if he was asking for a blanket permission. I don't know that I'd feel comfortable as a committee chair speaking for the legislature.
No.
I mean, I can speak for myself and put my title as legislator, but...
We've had a lot of conversation in committee and here about these cuts. We've heard, you know, from the Racker Center came and talked to us, so this is not a new item.
And again, I may not have said it clearly. We would circulate this to the legislature. So this wouldn't be done in a vacuum. It would be circulated to the legislature, but the focus would be on examining that specific piece of legislation on those individuals.
Thank you.
Yep.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, for example, and I was going to ask you to talk about the Tiger Grant, the city's federal transportation proposal that was submitted yesterday at 5, and we were asked very late to put in a letter of support. Letter of support was fine, but there was a request for a significant match from Tompkins County, and we said we can't do that. We can't promise that. So that was removed, and we, you know, provided the support letter. I mean, I'm frankly asked quite often for letters of support for one thing or another, and you know, housing agencies, you know, a lot of other seems to be a lot, mostly Better Housing, I think Neighborhood Housing, but sometimes others that are proposing some kind of grant, and you know, usually I go ahead and just send the letter. It's not that controversial, but in this case, this is proposing to commit the county to something that we had absolutely no time to discuss and really consider. So, Julie?
When you send that letter, do you send it just from you, or do you send it on behalf of the county?
It's usually, I sign it, my chair of the legislature, you know, goes on under my name.
There are grants that people seek for things that I disagree with, and I would not like to think that my legislature is sending a letter of support. So I'm a little concerned about simply supplying a letter of support.
Affordable housing?
It depends what it says, what the grant is for.
Okay. Mike?
I think a letter of support for a grant of that size for our county seat for transportation made a lot of sense. I'm glad we didn't go any further than the letter of support.
Thank you, Mike. Carol?
Yeah, I'll say, I mean, my experience with granting agencies is that they know the difference between a resolution and how to read whether somebody's just using their title for identification and whether they're saying our group has endorsed this. There's usually a level of sophistication there. So I don't have a problem with somebody using their title, any of us using our title in signing letters, things we believe in. It's if there's wording in the letter that says our legislature has supported something if we haven't acted, that would be crossing a line. But I don't think that's what Martha's talking about.
No.
Well, I'm thinking of repowering a or Cuba operating station, for example.
All right. Thank you. This has all been Joe's report. Thank you, Joe. All right. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
This week I got a final order approving a settlement in the case of Tracy versus Freshwater, which is only significant because it lasted 13 years. In April of 2000, Deputy Freshwater pulled over a guy driving who happened to be Patrick Tracy, though he said his name was Seth Ruggles and then admitted it wasn't, and then said his name was Jeff Kearns and admitted it wasn't, and then said his name was David McGuire and admitted that it wasn't. There was an incident that ensued during which Tracy was tried to get away. He was subdued by Officer Freshwater, during which time he suffered some injury. He brought an action in the Northern District of New York. It went to the Second Circuit. Then he tried to go to the Supreme Court, which didn't hear it. It was remanded back to the Northern District on a very small issue. The judge eventually determined that even if Tracy were to win on that issue, the most he could get was $1, which led to the settlement where we agreed to pay him nothing. But in any event, it's significant because it took 13 years and a lot of time and effort, but it didn't end up costing the county anything, and I guess it shows just how long justice can take.
Justice delayed is justice denied.
And you probably read about it or heard something about it 13 years ago.
Peter?
I just want to suggest it might have been more smarter to try a compromise solution like 50 cents.
No, we weren't paying them anything.
Jonathan, where are we with the FAA lawsuit?
The FAA lawsuit is over. It's now become moot. The order that was being challenged, the FAA has sent the court a notice that that order is revoked. So therefore, if they can't amend it or change it, they'd basically have to start again, which would mean they'd have to, you know, which would mean it'd have to be a new lawsuit. But they'd be well advised to start again anyway because they had a lot of problems with that order and they really didn't follow the procedures, et cetera, that they should have. That lawsuit is been dismissed as moot, I don't expect, you know, if the FAA were to ever decide again to close towers, I think they'd follow a much different procedure. And in fact, do all the things we said that they didn't do. So maybe, in a sense, we provided them a roadmap of what they should do. On the other hand, I do think it was an important thing to do because a lot of airports put in a lot of time, money, and effort suing the FAA about it, and it let the FAA know that if they're going to do this, there's going to be a lot of response. It's not going to be an easy thing to do. So I think in that sense, it was a good thing.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions for Jonathan? Finance Directors David and Rick. Rick and David?
wanted to make a presentation, as we're required to do, to file our annual financial report with the, so it's available for the public to review. It was due on May 1st, and we filed it yesterday. This report has been audited by auditors who are now working on their final audit report for the county. This report does evidence continued stability of the county's finances. The general fund balance increased modestly. We have an unassigned fund balance of about 11%, which is in excess of our target requirements. So the responsibility is to give it to the clerk and let the public know it's available. And the other thing is we are financing $10 million in July, and we will be undergoing a bond rating review in the next week or two. This report will reflect favorably on our conversations on the rating. It evidences our story of continued, a beacon of stability in New York State. That's my report.
David, would that be your final annual financial report for Tompkins County?
My final financial report, yes.
Thank you very much. Any questions for David? Rick Snyder, would you like to make a report at all?
No, I have nothing really to report this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Consent agenda. Really a tough one. Resolution A, ID 4178, authorization for public hearing, Tompkins Cortland Community College operating budget 2013-2014. And I believe that is the only thing we have on the consent agenda. Moved by Pam, seconded by Pat. And we have this in our folders around our desks of the operating budget. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That is carried unanimously. All right, let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First item that I'd like to report on is the continuing discussion. Joe reminded me on the Gatsby 21 item, and if anyone has an interest in that, we're having a special meeting. When was that, Joe? After this meeting.
You know, Frank, just because we're early and don't have a big agenda doesn't mean we have to.
I'm just following everybody else's lead. We heard about radon. We heard about a trip to Washington. So I figured it was appropriate. Thank you, Martha. I want to draw your attention to one item. Excuse me. That the next health committee is June 11th. One of the items that we were successful in bringing forward, we're going to have an update. Some of you will remember the syringe exchange program, the needle exchange program that we started a number of years ago. We've asked the representative from the AIDS work group, Southern Tier, to come to the meeting and give us an update on that program. We were pretty instrumental in starting that, and it would be good to get a status report on it. Pam raised the question about health care. What was the article in the Times? It was Sunday's paper?
It was the beginning of a series on Sunday, so
the reason I'm asking is that we're trying to get a presentation here with Martha's help on the health exchanges, because we're going to be instituting the Navigator program through several of our departments probably over the summer. And it might be helpful to buddy up that article with some of the information.
What this article is talking about is why our cost for health insurance in this country
is so high.
It really shows you exactly why it's high, higher than any other country in Western Europe.
If you don't mind, I'd like to talk with you about it afterwards.
Sure. Okay?
The only other item I want to bring to your attention on health care is in yesterday's Ithaca Journal, there was an article on the status of the hydraulic fracturing. Some of you may have read that. I hope you did. The part that has been troubling to me and to a number of people in the community is the time it's taken to get the health care piece out of the DOH. And that article yesterday really, I have to compliment the journal. It really did a pretty good job on walking through the delays. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, please go back and read it, because it really does explain some of the hurdles that have been placed in front of everyone. And there's no reason why we can't have that report to know what the impact is. And I'm glad we passed that resolution a meeting or two back. Mm-hmm. I hope there was a reaction to it. I bet there wasn't, though. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, thought you'd like to know if you haven't had a chance to read it. Next committee meeting is the 11th of June. If you'd like to attend, we'd certainly like to have you. And that item that, I don't know if you want to bring that forward at that meeting, Joe, or not, but I don't want to spring it on you that fast. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions? Well, Frank, I did talk to Betty Falco about doing a presentation.
Oh, good.
And I talked about whether she should partner up with Jean McPheeters, who's doing the business side of it. She thought they could together do kind of a 10-minute first layer. It's a lot of information, but a 10-minute presentation together to hear, so the public really hears the whole thing, and then...
When would you want to schedule that, Martha?
We're looking at August, and I don't know if Betty... I think we're going to contact Jean first.
Yeah, that'll be good, because that'll be closer to the actual kickoff of the exchanges.
Right, she's been waiting until they actually kind of had a little more information.
More data.
Yeah. And as an aside, I was on the board of AIDS work when we started the needle exchange program. And I remember, Frank, that it was extremely controversial.
No kidding.
And right. And I didn't know you except from like when I rented your apartment back in 1975. But
you were just a kid.
I was just a kid. You too.
So was Steve.
I remember that George Ferrari, the staff director, saying that you were really a key ally, that you were really a champion for this. You understood the need for the needle exchange program, and that you were instrumental in getting it done. So I want to thank you.
Thanks. Took a lot of heat for that.
I bet.
Very worthwhile program.
I bet.
Thanks, Martha.
Yep. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Well, now, I can't remember when our last meeting was. Nor can I exactly tell you when our next one is, but it's the usual time. At the important thing that we have to announce is that the Ellis Hollow, the rest of the Ellis Hollow program is going to start soon. We had a public meeting. I think it's sort of interesting. We had a public meeting out in Ellis Hollow, and we presented them for the first time, the results of our famous experiment on the question of whether the green shoulders to calm the traffic. And calm generally means make the traffic drive slower. And
wait, drum roll.
What?
There's a drum roll now.
Yeah, drum roll.
Suspense.
So, you know, it's a hard experiment to do because you have to really, to do it's basic to all science. If you do an experiment like that, first you measure it before, then you measure it after, and you look at the difference, and you see, are the two numbers consistent with nothing having happened, or are the two numbers consistent with something having happened? And that's basically what an experiment is. But the problem is that no day is like any other day. So before will be a different day than after. It may be raining. It may be during a Hornell holiday. It may be, there's any thousands of reasons why the day that you measure it may not be the same as the day that you're comparing it to. But I've discussed with the highway division on many occasions the lengths to which they ought to go and that they are going to make sure that it is a valid experiment, and I personally was convinced that they were doing exactly the right things to make this measurement. And the answer is that it does not show that there is a statistical difference between the two sets of measurements. And on the other hand, it doesn't show that there isn't a statistical difference between the two sets of measurements. There is some belief that the residents think that it is a vast improvement, and that people who actually walk on the shoulders feel safer in doing it. Now, there's something you can't measure except to take a survey and find out if a lot of people feel that way. But anyway, that's more or less what the results of the measurements are. I'm hoping that we can find some way to sample the opinion of the people who are walking along there to see whether they feel it's an advantage. At the meeting, of course, there were people who have their fingers very tightly on our closed purse strings and complain about our doing anything for which there is not infallible evidence that it will work. It is, I think, a relatively small expenditure of money to do this job, and my own belief is that it certainly shouldn't be the first priority on building a road, but on the other hand, if in fact a survey shows that the public that walk and bike along that highway think that that they feel more safe, then it's worth spending the amount of money that we spend to do that. So that's that's my report.
Thank you, Peter. Carol?
Yeah, so I was a little bit confused about reading about the results of that study in the Ithaca Journal before we'd had the chance to talk about it at committee. Did I miss something? I hope we'll have the chance to talk about it and
share
in more detail exactly what that study might tell us and what it doesn't. And then also to respond to what I read. Again, this is just what I read in the paper, not what I've heard about from our staff, about the concerns of bicyclists about the slickness of the paint and what that might say or not say, because as I understand it, what we're hoping to do is actually have the asphalt be the color rather than have a slick paint that's painted on top. So, again, I hope we'll have a chance to talk about that.
Okay, we certainly will have a chance to talk about it. I don't quite know how it happened, but we did schedule this meeting, and then we did have the information, so it seemed better to schedule it with to share it with the residents rather than not. It is true that the slipperiness of the sidewalk was raised as an issue, and as far of the painted shoulders was raised as an issue, and I believe that that's something we must look into. If it's slippery to ride on, then I think it's no good. But it's complicated. The supplier and the person who is applying the surface, it wasn't clear that it was. We can't honestly separate the application from the quality of the paint. But there were problems in the very beginning, which I think were solved. This is the first time I've heard about the slipperiness. The slipperiness has some finite lifetime. It goes away after a while. So I was wondering whether we could sort of sand it a little bit to roughen up the surface right afterwards. But we'll be talking about that at the committee meeting.
Mike?
Well, I attended the meeting, and I sat next to Peter, but I came away with a different impression than you did, Peter. The folks that spoke definitely liked the shoulders. They seemed to like the green color as a sort of separation effect. But several spoke about the difficulties with the paint, the bicyclists particularly, how making it slippery and more dangerous. There were some concerned about whether the new project will include more closed drainage. There were a couple of people wanted the the ditches to continue, but I don't think that was a majority. I certainly came away feeling that when I did not support the painting of the shoulders last fall, I was still feeling what I had said at the time was correct. I think $18,000 is a lot of money. Yeah, in a million, two or three or 2 million, maybe not, but it's a lot of money. And I hope we're not going to go ahead with painting these shoulders on the next phase of this project. And it really troubled me in the Ithaca Journal when I read that folks in Ellis Hollow questioned them, but the highway department was going ahead with it anyway. I don't think I heard the highway department put it that way, but it was troublesome.
Jim, was your hand up? Yeah, Jim, and then I want to say something, Peter, before we go to you. Go ahead, Jim.
The next meeting is June 17th.
Thank you. I'm afraid I actually didn't read the Ithaca Journal article, so I was there also. I definitely heard the highway department say that they're going to put it in as a bid alternate, that they want to see what, if it's, remember that this was done after the rest of the project was completed last time, so it was a whole different job to bid out. It was an experimental process, an experimental material. The people who were applying it were clearly experimenting. So we've had a couple of years, and the project isn't going to be done until 2015, so by then maybe there'll be additional experience. So they'll put it out as a bid. See, the hope is certainly that if it's done as part of this larger project, first off, that the cost will be less and that the experience of the vendor would be improved. So it's not something that's definite. It's just something that they wanted to get feedback from the public based on what, the first half of a very similar road, did people like it or not care? And so they got that feedback. There was one person out of the room that was concerned about the cost. The others all felt it was very positive. And the data on the speed, the effect on speed, John acknowledged he didn't have all the data analyzed. I'm not sure he had all the data with him or he didn't maybe have it all, John Lampman. But that's when the meeting was. He wanted to present what he had. My sense is that when he has it all compiled and analyzed, then it'll come to committee. But he wanted to tell the public something, which was the way I heard it was like, this is what we know so far, but it was still sort of with some question marks. Peter and then Brian.
Yeah, just to answer Mike on one issue. none of these things are facts, and a lot of things are just how people feel about them. And let me tell you, I'm a person, and I walk a lot. And, for instance, periodically I walk to meetings at the Emergency Response Center from my house, which is first along Warren Road up to Route 13, and then along Route 13 up to Brown Road in order to get there. And those shoulders are very wide on both of those streets, and the traffic goes very fast. And honestly, I am ready to jump at any minute. I don't have a sense of the cars making a demarcation between the shoulder where I'm walking and the street that they're driving on. They're all the same color. It's only a line that separates them, the kind of line that you cross when you, drift into the other lane. I feel in my soul that I would be a whole lot more comfortable there if that were not paved or if that were paved with a distinct color that says, I'm different. This is my space, not yours. If it was sand down there, I'd feel quite comfortable. But when it's tarmac that looks exactly the same, except for the line, you feel pretty nervous walking in with the traffic coming towards you. I personally believe that at least people will feel better if it's paved, feel safer.
Brian and then Frank.
Yeah. Well, Peter, for at least the Route 13 portion that you're walking on, it's a state highway. I don't think you're legally supposed to be walking or biking.
That's right.
On a state highway. So there's no sense. I would suggest
just
you just
kidding. He's
just
not really.
Walk straight down. Never mind. You know, I don't find it particularly shocking that you have a meeting in Ellis Hollow and the folks in Ellis Hollow are in favor of this. And I just would like to remind you that Ellis Hollow is a small part of a fairly big county that has potholes and stuff like that in it. So let's try not to lose sight of that. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Peter, I don't mean to put you on the spot because my admiration and interest in sidewalks is second to none, especially green ones. But public works is a real, and facilities are really transcend, as Brian just said, the whole county. And in the rural areas, roads and bridges are important. Is there anything else going on in the department that we, can you bring us up to speed on any other road work or whatever beside Ellis Hollow and Henshaw Road?
I haven't prepared to do that. I would be I'll be happy to do that at the next meeting.
Thank you. Okay, great. Thank you.
Carol,
yeah, I'll volunteer that, and I think this was mentioned at the last meeting, that anybody, this is the season for, you know, working on roads and bridges, and if you go to our highway department's website, if you go to TompkinsCounty.org /highway, you can get to a very good list and map of exactly where there is road work going on now.
Looks a lot like this, right, Carol?
Jim?
Yeah. I checked that. I mean, I don't think it's necessary that any committee chair has to come and describe 17 highway jobs or 4 bridge jobs. We have access to that online, and you just need to go there and get it.
All right. Thank you all very much. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
So we have not met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting this Thursday. And on that agenda, we will be hearing a little more from Julie Maddock and talking about the WIB and their plan and what they feel are the key issues for improving our workforce. We'll be having our quarterly report from the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And I would encourage you all to join us. It's at 3:30 this Thursday. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Will. Any questions?
No.
All right. Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We also have not met since the last meeting, but I wanted to make a couple of comments. One is there was another article in the Ithaca Journal regarding the Center of Government Study and the old library. I think it gave some wrong impressions, to put it mildly. I want to assure everyone that the committee has not made any recommendation at this point. Let me repeat that. The committee has not made any recommendation at this point about what will happen to the old library once we remove the final programs that are in there, when we find a place for them. And we do still have programs in that building. We have not decided that it's going to be demolished, which is a $600,000 figure. We have not decided it's going to be sold for senior housing or not-for-profit use or for a center of government in the future. We haven't made any of those decisions. So I think that's pretty important. I've been asked that question by a lot of my constituents right now. So you finally decided what to do with it. And I have to tell them, not quite. But we will get there. And the committee will have a recommendation and a report to the full legislature. But it's just a little early at this point. The other thing I wanted to mention is if you haven't gotten over to look at the Governor Tompkins building, the installation of the new desks over there. I think you'd find they're interesting. if you look at the wiring that's being done with those desks, you begin to understand the complications that are required for the broadcast and other things that we do from these rooms, and why that part of the project is driving so much of the costs for this project. I think the desks are really nice looking. I think that they will serve us very well. We've begun to talk about things like seating over there. I've been talking with Martha, and we'll bring this up in the committee. Do we just kind of pick up where we sit here and kind of try to put it over there? Do people have requests for different seating, for example? I don't know, but that's something we have to think about. And even things like nameplates. There's not as much room on the fronts of the desks over there for the nameplates that will fit, which are smaller than the ones we have over here. So the question becomes, do we put those nameplates on at all? Would they be visible from the cameras, for example? So we need to talk about those kind of issues. As far as when we get over there, Kathy Covert and I had a discussion the other day, and we'll bring it up again in committee. We're kind of hoping that maybe the first meeting in August would be the right meeting to have for the first one for the legislature there. But I would certainly like to see a couple of volunteer committees hold meetings in the chambers at the desks ahead of that, and try to coordinate that with our staff so that they can get some practice with the new equipment that will be in the control room and the cameras. So that's pretty much it, but it's really looking nice over there.
Thank you very much, Mike. I also was concerned about the Ithaca Journal article for a slightly different reason. I felt that despite several of us having conversations with the reporter sort of every time an article comes out where the reason that all these moves are happening is not mentioned, in particular this article, it seemed a glaring omission that that this article did not point out that moving the Office for the Aging, moving us over to the other building was all part of fulfilling a mandate that the court required us to leave this building. And so I had a couple of conversations with the Journal staff, and I actually was able to give David Bohr a bit more context about the length of time that the court system has been asking us to leave and how patient they've been, and sometimes maybe not so patient. Sent them a number of documents related to that, and I think they might be looking at doing an article on that whole subject, on the law that was established. Mike, you know when the law was, what was the year when?
It was in the, I think, the earlier mid-80s.
When the state took over the operation of the courts in return for the counties putting taking responsibility for space for the courts, and also the fact that many other counties have had to build entire courthouse in new buildings for their court systems, and we're in a position where we've been able to make these moves and actually save taxpayers money. So I hope that we see an article on that topic before the end of the summer. So. Any other comments or questions for Mike? Thank you. Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you. The Government Operations Committee met on May 28th. We spent a fair amount of time listening to the report on the work from home program and discussing various different parts of that report. It was very, very interesting, and I thought that the Social Service Department did a very thorough job and provided us with a lot of good information to make decisions going forward. The general assessment, I would say, was very positive. They mentioned that the work performance and staff morale, the improvement in staff morale, outweighed the challenges that arose as they were working through this for the first time. And I'm sure everybody would realize that there are going to be challenges that arise when you're trying to work through a new program. One of them had to do with technology and people working from home. There were a few hitches in the technology, but they were able to work that out. And another problem that arose to some extent anyway had to do with the remainder of the staff that was working here or working in the social service department with coverage for their walk-in clients, since some of the staff was not there to help with coverage. But they were able to work those things out. And the overall results, according to their report, suggest that an expansion of the work-from-home program, both within DSS as well as within other county departments, it would be wise for us to explore that further. So the committee found that very helpful and very good information. We also spent quite a bit of time talking with finance, with David, about recommendations to withhold properties from the foreclosure auction. So we had quite a bit of discussion about that. We did discuss the resolution that will be on the agenda tonight from the Budget Committee, so I'll let Jim talk about that. We did not have time to discuss the Code of Ethics, which, as you recall, we were given some extra time to discuss the responses from the department heads. So we have scheduled an extra meeting, which will be tomorrow at 11 o'clock, in case anybody is interested in attending that meeting. It will be the single item on the agenda will be to discuss the Code of Ethics and specifically the responses from department heads. So that's it.
Thanks very much, Pat. Any questions? Frank?
Pat, the meeting tomorrow, will that be in the old jail conference room?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Well, we met yesterday, and we had quite a lively meeting. We had various people there who were ostensibly there to talk about what I thought were different topics, and they all ended up feeling related and all wanted to comment on each other's presentations. So it made for a lively meeting. A lot of them were energy related. I just want to give a shout out to our planning department. Ed and his staff have led us and really the region through an awful lot related to how you build for sustainability, how you create a more sustainable community. We'll hear more next time. Our actual action items were we endorsed the Cleaner, Greener Southern Tier Regional Sustainability Plan. Because of the timing of our meeting being the day before this meeting, anything that doesn't have to come, that isn't timely, we wait and bring to you 2 weeks from now. So that and our appointments will come then. We would like to request, if there's time at the next meeting, it would really make sense the whole committee felt that it made sense for everybody to hear a presentation about the Cleaner, Greener plan. So if that can happen, it will. If not, I'll say more about it next time. Our planning department is also engaged in looking at how to write a new comprehensive plan for us, with us, and they will be starting to bring that out, a presentation about the kinds of things and to solicit information from our residents about the kinds of things they'd like to see in the new comprehensive plan. So if we have thoughts, we should get them to Ed and his staff. And certainly as those presentations come about, people might want to pay attention and come. energy-related, Ed was slated to give us a presentation following upon the presentation that we had from Tony Ingraffia and Bob Howarth about the Jacobson Report. I had asked Ed to come to us with a list of the kinds of things that we might be able to move forward on as a community and that we might encourage New York State to move forward on. And he started to put that together, and we spent some time talking about that. He put together an incredible list of the things that we don't have to wait for New York State, at the top of which was maybe streamlining the small-scale solar and wind installation permitting process. Currently, each municipality having its own kind of process for that. Is there something that we could do as a community? And then more detail about the other kinds of renewable energy facilities, clean energy backup emergency power systems, financing and incentives, things like that that we talked about some of, but we'll hear more about. We heard the presentations that we heard from other people kind of fit into what Ed was going to be doing anyway. One of them was one of the tools that's talked about in the Jacobson Report is feed-in tariffs. So we asked Don Barber came and talked to us about what a feed-in tariff is, and we thought a little bit about what is that something that we could encourage New York State to use or for us to use. Basically, what I understood is a feed-in tariff, the way it would work is that people who produce renewable energy, energy through renewable sources, receive a premium, receive money back, basically, for having produced that. And the money to do that would come from fees on dirty energy production. It turns out that New York State would have to do this. Cities and villages have the power to do it, but not counties, which we had originally thought. Bob Nicholas came and talked to us about the work he's been doing on a proposed solar array at the airport. And it's interesting to note we've got some land that's at the end of a runway that is across Warren Road from the main part of the airport. It's behind Borg Warner. And it's basically land that the FAA requires us to keep without developing it for people to frequent it. It has to stay empty so that planes, it's the approach to the runway. And there is the capability of putting 2 megawatts of solar arrays there. That 2 megawatts, that's on the order of magnitude that the power plant, it was giving permission from New York State to even look into putting on their property. It's about 40 panels is what it looks like. I pass around this picture. People are interested about where it would go. So it's an exciting idea. The FAA will require him to do a study of glare so that there isn't any danger from glare getting into pilots' eyes. And Jonathan gave us an excellent presentation, Jonathan Wood, about what the process would be should there be a new natural gas pipeline needing to go through any of our county, basically what the Article 7 permit application process would be like, what opportunities there'd be for the public to comment, and what the timing for that would be. It isn't something we need to worry about at this point, but it's good to be prepared. The cleaner, greener, the... I will note that Kathy Wilsey is retiring. That was a shock. She's going to be with us, I think, through the end of July, so we can watch for times opportunities to say goodbye to her, but... that is a loss to the county, but she is eligible to retire, and she's looking forward to it. We then had the unrelated thing that came to us was under privilege of the floor. I got calls and had an opportunity to speak to both directors of the Affordable Housing Agency's Better Housing and Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services about the properties that are now slated to go to auction for non-payment of taxes. And the question came up, what is our policy, or maybe what should our policy be, related to that list of properties and discussions with people in the community about how to keep those properties on the tax rolls and owned locally. In the past, the city of Ithaca has taken its part of the list of properties that are slated in some of the years in the past and gone to Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. They were the ones who actually showed up at our meeting. John Spence commented ahead of time. And has worked with INHS, which has money, to in the right circumstances to try to work with people to stay in properties that we're threatening to send to the auction. That didn't happen this year. It turns out that that is not a policy. It just was a practice that happened some years. And so after a presentation by Paul Mazzarella, I think the sense of the community was that this is something that he can go work with David or Rick on for this year if he's got people that he's concerned about and that he'd be ready to act upon for this year, but that we really ought to take a longer period of time and look at whether there's something that we can do for next year and the following years to make sure that timing-wise these organizations have the opportunity to look into whether they can keep people in their houses. The concern that he brought to us was that often, not always, but often the other bidders at an auction are people who don't live in the community who are looking to take the properties and make a quick buck and not necessarily keep them up. And I think from my conversation with David Squires before the meeting, our aim is to keep these properties on and get them back on the tax rolls. So anything we can do to make that happen is something that their department might be willing to work with. Anyway, we had a discussion at the committee about how to proceed with this. I'm not sure we resolved it, but it is something that we'll talk about as next year approaches. I think that's it.
All right. Thank you, Carol. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, we have not had a committee meeting since our last legislature meeting. We will be meeting in June, on June 24th at 5:30 at the public library. I will say that because of the nature of the project, there's a lot that's going on in between our committee meetings, and we're continuing to work to resolve some of the little challenges that have come up in regards to this project. And at least one of them, I think, is going to work itself out, that had to do with one of the towers. That appears to be coming along. And I will also mention that I have had, just this past week, I've had two emails from people thanking me for, because they just recently, within the past few days, have been able to start getting broadband internet service at their homes. So the build-out has actually started, even though some of these things are still being worked on. So I was pretty pleased to hear that.
That's great. That's just terrific. I hope you pop some champagne. Thanks, Pat. Any questions? All right. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm going to move Resolution B. It's the Legislator Kiefer resolution that's been changed. It's an appropriation from the contingent fund to fund program analyst position for 1 year, Department Administration. And I would move that.
Second by Brian. Discussion. Jim.
No, nothing.
Oh, ready to vote? Okay, we need a short form roll call.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
You can all get up and leave, and let me just talk a little bit about the Budget Committee last time.
Can we see it on the website?
No, you probably could, because, but we were having trouble with filming that day, Frank. And the sides of the room were painted green. Let me just say we had a fund balance discussion, and we are prepared, and I'm not certain if it's going to be our committee, but I believe government operations, we are prepared to support moving the fund balance, general fund balance in 2014 budget to 10%. We have been operating at that number in real time in terms of the money we've had in the fund balance, but we've had a designated 5% fund balance. So we are going to be moving it. We'll recommend 10%, and I think your committee will then take care of that. Our next meeting is June 24th. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Jim? Hey, Brian?
Actually, more of a quick question for David or Rick or Ricky. What is it? I didn't know.
Rick. Okay. John is the only one
who can
call
him
Rick.
Okay. David, we have a resolution that's going to set that new ceiling at or goal at 10%. If we pass that earlier, then when you go out to into the bond market for the $10 million or whatever, would that be more favorable to pass it sooner?
The answer is yes, but it won't happen soon enough.
Rick, you got to use a mic. Sorry.
The short answer is yes, but moving it and getting it through the process would not happen soon enough to get it to the bond markets this time. In fact, Dave and I are going up to the FA's tomorrow to work on the operating statement, and I think for the future, though, it's a real wise move to proceed in that direction. I don't think it's going to affect this particular issue.
Okay.
Tim?
When were you looking to move on this, Pat? It was my sense it would be the next meeting or no?
That's
Kathy?
Kind of right, though, yeah.
We have a special meeting scheduled tomorrow. I don't have the language prepared, but I mean, theoretically, we could add it to the agenda.
Regular meeting is June 25th.
Yeah.
Legislature meets June 18th.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
The next regular GO meeting is June 25th. Legislature meets on June 18th.
Joe?
Yeah, in terms of timing, we need to talk to the rating agencies in the next week or two. I think we can represent to the rating agencies right. That this has already gone through one committee with I think, unanimous support coming through the Budget Committee, and it's our expectation. So they will know that we are making headway toward a policy statement. Mm-hmm. I don't know that if we just tell them that we went from where we were, 5% to 10%, that would be enough to lift us from our very high rating that we have right now, AA. Up to a AAA, up to the next level. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about that, but we will certainly represent this when we talk to the rating agencies in that conference call next week or the week after.
I'm just thinking in terms of, especially now when, as we know, many of the counties in the state are, their reserves are going down and down, and we can represent to them at least a stable reserve, even through all this stuff in the last several years. And that we're raising our policy.
Yeah, I think that's the way the conversation would go, and I'm kind of speaking for the finance guys behind me too. We can prove in our financial state. That's what they look at first. What do you really have in the bank? we can show that we've made progress on that. We're not using nearly as much of our reserves to balance our annual budget as we did even a few years ago. They like that. So we can show real progress. We can also say that we intend to establish by policy that this is there'll be a 10% policy goal. I think all that combined will help the presentation.
And for the record, and Joe mentioned it, all the members of the committee who were there, I believe, were very supportive of the move. And it's something we've been talking about for a long time, the whole legislature and the fiscal policy. This is only one part of it. It is not, we're not changing wholesale changes to the fiscal policy, but by doing this one small thing, it could bring some real pluses to the county.
Okay, anything else? Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Brian Robison, Chair.
Thanks, Martha. We have not met since the last meeting of this body. I just had a note passed to me. Oh, and we're scheduled to meet next Monday, the 10th. But I just got a note passed to me that we have no items, and I do not believe we have any presentations, unless somebody tells me different.
I smell cancellation in the air.
Yes, but
stay tuned.
That's a definite maybe yes. Peter?
I would prefer to have a meeting tomorrow. I have an item or two that I'd like to discuss.
You mean Monday?
Monday, sorry. Right. Yeah, next
okay.
Monday.
Could you get them to somebody so that we can formulate an agenda then?
I'll give them to you tonight.
What's that?
Yes, okay, yes, I will.
Okay. Then we're going to meet next Monday at 3:30.
Good.
What's on the agenda?
That's a real good question.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Brian.
Okay.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
WDIC met last, whenever it was, the 30th, which is not our normal meeting time. We spent that time, the bulk of that time, going over our 7th draft of the diversity policy, and I emphasize and underscore 7th draft, which is now going out for impact review. It will be at the department heads and staff level, and at some point we certainly will encourage, I don't know just yet, Paula, all of our legislators to take a look at it, because our intention is when we bring it to this body that it will be ready to be voted on. The policy is being constructed off of legislation that we had already passed many years ago, that were diversity policy guidelines that this body had already adopted. So it's not a ton of new stuff. It is primarily based on what we had already adopted. So our hope is that by our August meeting, if not the second meeting in August or so, that we should be able to have it before this body. That was the bulk of our conversation. We are also very thankful to the Living Wage Working Group for their continued work on trying to get us to a place where we have a little bit more teeth in the policy that we have. It's one of the things when we first put that policy together, we said we needed to revisit at some point, and the opportune time is now. So that is the extent to some of our discussion. I'll say one other quick thing. As a committee, we did thank this body for weighing in on the United American Families Act and the resolution that we passed, but do express our disappointment that our federal government did not see it fit or proper or right, or correct, to include that as part of the immigration reform bill and movement. It is very, very disappointing. So, but thank you for your support in trying to lend our voice to an issue that's very important about people's human and civil rights. If any other committee member thinks of anything else we talked about, No, I'm lying. There is. We are hoping at some point soon to sort of revisit our disability audit that we did however many years ago, and to engage AREL in helping us to go through our county and see where we are in terms of compliance and what are things that we probably need to fix, etc. And if we can find that audit, really take a look at it and see what have we done and the things that came up in it to remedy situations or to enhance our situations for our constituents or colleagues or friends who are people with disabilities. So that's one of the things that we'll be working on upcoming as well. That is my report. Go ahead.
Thanks very much, Leslyn. Pat?
Leslyn, I was just going to also mention we had a really positive report from Paula on the reading groups.
Thank you. I knew there was something else. So we did. If you remember that this body did also endorse our reading and discussion group, and we got a grant from the New York State Council on the Humanities for that program. I thought I'd reported on this before, maybe not. But anyhow, it concluded 4 weeks of a really good mixture of staff participating in facilitated sessions on some key readings. I was there for the last session just to thank people. I was really impressed in seeing that we had a mixture of department heads, frontline staff. Jonathan was a part of the group. Just a really good mix. And the results and the report that came back to us from our evaluation, the Council on Humanities certainly highlighted some of the comments that came back from our evaluation that speaks to exactly what the program intends to do. So people were really pleased with it, with the program, and hope that we'll be able to continue to do this. So I'll be looking to Paula, since this has been her brainchild and her baby, that we continue to encourage all of you as it comes up to try to participate, because it was really well received and well recognized by the state for what we did. So thank you, Paula, and thanks to those who participated and to all of you for supporting it.
Very good. Jonathan?
I did participate, and it really was a very positive experience, and I know everybody who participated had a lot of thoughts on how it could be even better. And I think, as it progresses, it'll be really good. That's it.
Good. Thank you, Jonathan. Brian?
Before we break up, I just wanted the intern to understand you don't get out of here before dark. So if you don't know your way home, you better find it tonight.
Okay. Don't jinx it, Brian. We're not done yet. But good point. Thank you very much, Leslyn. Do I have a motion on the May 21st meeting, meeting minutes? Moved by Pat, seconded by Frank. Any discussion? Dooley?
Yeah, it'll keep us here a little bit longer, Brian. On packet page 17, which is page 13 of these minutes, one of the two TCAT resolutions in the next to the last whereas has it correctly. It says county staff in consultation with TCAT. But on page 18, the second TCAT resolution, the next to the last whereas, that same change did not get made. It says Tompkins County instead of county staff. And I called this to Kathy Covert's attention earlier this evening, and she said it's too late. The resolution's been certified. So I am asking, because this is the next meeting following that meeting, I can ask for reconsideration of that resolution. I'd like to reconsider it so that that wording change can get moved and put in. So I make that motion for reconsideration.
Is there, of the resolution?
I think that's the only way I can do this.
We're right now talking about a motion on the minutes.
On the minutes. And there's an error in the minutes, as I understand it. And I don't know how to correct it, except for this.
Jonathan, I don't think we can take a resolution on a motion on the resolution while we're debating the minutes.
Right. I mean, it would seem out of order if, in fact, there's been a motion made on the minutes. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, there's been a motion made on the minutes.
Okay.
I guess we could move to table.
You could vote on the minutes, and then we can make that motion.
Then it's too late, isn't it?
No, there's no. Sometimes organizations vote on the minutes at the beginning. There's no rule that you have to vote on the minutes at the end.
So we could. Okay. Then the minutes would stand, but then there'd be a reconsideration of the resolution, which would go into our next minutes, right?
Well, Madam Chair.
To table the minutes.
Wait a second.
Well, I mean, I don't think she's challenging that the minutes are accurate, right?
Yeah, I am challenging that the minutes
is.
Are accurate.
I remember the change in the language. I didn't remember. I didn't know whether it was in both resolutions. What? There was only one revised resolution distributed.
Well, but that has happened in another recent instance also, where we had a bond resolution where there were three that needed changing and only one revised was circulated.
I assume that there are times when, yes, I remember the bond resolution change, and it was made very explicit that change was for all three. The question is, was it made as explicit that this change would be relevant? Brian, you had to go and say something. That this would be relevant for the two TCAT resolutions. Unclear that that's been true. So let me first ask if there would be a second to the motion to reconsider, just hypothetically speaking, if this were in order to do, would there be a second to reconsider the motion, the TCAT motion here? All right. Carol?
Well, I have first a question, and then if, depending on the answer, I may move to table the minutes. I recall that when Dooley's original correction was made, that she pointed out that it was need to be changed in two places. So I think we've already done this. But
my recollection.
In any case, I would move to table the minutes if it's... I would move to table them for just a few minutes if we can clear this up tonight, or I would move to table them until next time if we have to wait that long.
I'm going to rule that the motion to reconsider this resolution 2013-87 is out of order at this time. Are you saying
move to
table the minutes? Is there a second to tabling the minutes? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on tabling the minutes.
Madam Chair, you can't discuss.
You can't discuss the tabling motion on the minutes.
I'm glad somebody's awake. All right. Thank you, Peter. All in favor of tabling the minutes, please raise your hand.
All right.
One, two, three, four. Opposed. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. That fails 4-10. Frank?
I would suggest that we take the wording that Dooley is suggesting and amend the minutes that are under discussion that have been moved and seconded so that the minutes accurately reflect by comment that resolution perhaps is not worded correctly. And as the seconder...
Is that a motion?
I'll move that if it's appropriate. I mean, I'm the seconder of the... minutes of the motion to approve the minutes. So
that's a semi-friendly suggestion.
Semi-friendly suggestion.
Semi-friendly?
Is that semi-friendly to Pat?
It's friendly to me.
I'll ask you what you mean in a minute, but Peter?
I believe, unless I'm mistaken, I believe this is out of order. I believe that once the minutes are passed, they're passed.
They're not passed.
Any previous minutes.
These are the previous minutes, Peter.
The issue is that the resolution, this part of the minutes, represents the resolution that has been certified by the clerk and sent on to
She every Wednesday morning after our meetings, she sits and certifies things and sends them to the Department of State and sends them to each department head and does all these things with them. And that's been done with this language. Now, so these minutes, and I, Kathy doesn't represent things until without checking them. These minutes refer to what she has in the record as what we passed last time. Am I right? So the minutes are correct because this is what we passed last time. If we would like to reconsider the resolution for the sake of this language change, and I dare say I'm not sure correction is actually the right term for this change in language, but if we would like to reconsider the resolution, we can pass the minutes because they reflect what was done according to the clerk.
They reflect what was signed. So
and then we can consider a motion to reconsider the resolution.
The item, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Am I right, Jonathan?
Yeah, that's what I was saying when I said she's not really challenging the minutes. The minutes, I think, are accurate.
I think that they should. Challenging the minutes.
I am challenging
But as near as I can understand, the minutes accurately reflect what occurred. She's challenging whether that should have been the case. So I don't know any reason why the minutes couldn't be adopted, and then if we wish to change the resolution could be changed.
Why can't we amend the minutes?
I'm going to go to Will, who hasn't spoken all day except for his report.
Call the question.
On the minutes. Is the minutes. Do we accept the minutes? Is there a second to that? To calling the question on the minutes. Seconded by Peter. The question is, are we ending discussion on the minutes? If you're in favor of ending the discussion on the minutes, please raise your hand. Opposed? Everybody hasn't voted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, 8 to 5 is 13.
I would have voted on the eight side.
So it's 9 to 5 to call the question on the minutes. The question is called. All in favor of the minutes as presented in our packets, please raise your hand. Opposed. That passes 9 to 5. Minutes are done. Dooley.
If I may speak on the subject of the error in the minutes, which is what I was challenging, our clerk is a superb clerk, and it's an extreme rarity to see an error made by our clerk. But I was the person who, between Sunday night and Tuesday's legislature meeting, contacted Dwight Mingle to see if the wording was correct. Both resolutions had the identical wording. Both resolutions should have had the identical change. The error was made at the legislative level, and the minutes reflected the wrong information.
So are you making a motion to reconsider Resolution 20?
That's the only thing you're leaving open to me. I think Frank's motion was much more appropriate, but I'm at this point moving to reconsider the resolution so that it can be corrected to what it should be.
Resolution 2013-87, authorizing application for New York State dedicated transit funding for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Incorporated, state fiscal year 2013-14, is the motion to reconsider that, seconded by Frank. Discussion. Jim.
I have a question. Serious, what difference does it make?
When something says the county, it usually means the legislature. The county did not act on this. It was a negotiation between a staff member, Dwight Mingle, and TCAT.
Right.
I would like to ask Kathy Covert to describe the process of certification and what has to be done if we accept the reconsideration and pass a different version of this resolution. What staff time and involvement is required?
There will be a lot of staff time. I'll go in and correct the resolution and recertify it and send it out.
Okay. Kathy, I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
I'll go in and make the change to the resolution and recertify it and send it out again.
Joe.
Yeah, here's what I don't know. I don't know if this resolution got in on time to meet a grant deadline, an application deadline for this grant. So I don't know whether this was one of those where we had to get it approved by the end of May, for example, to get it in for a June 1st application. So, again, I wish I could be conclusive there, but I'm a little concerned about timing issues that may be created if we send something in a few weeks later than what the original date of passage was.
Well, but it's already been sent in.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah.
I think I saw Pam's hand first, or Pat. Did you have your hand up, Pam?
No.
Okay, then it was Pat. Go ahead.
I guess just from a common sense point of view, not trying to get into the technicalities of the Robert's Rules, but just thinking about it, it seems to me that if employees negotiated this, whether it was the county that signed up being, you know, the legislature, or whether it was employees, it's still the county. And I just don't have any problem with the wording the way it is. The employees weren't doing it on their own private time as individuals outside of their purview as county employees. They were doing it because they were representing the county. So I think it could stand exactly the way it is. That way we don't have to get into this confusion with any grant application that may have been submitted. And it just seems to me that in this one particular case, it's not necessary to go back and try to make this change.
Thank you, Pat. Peter, then
I'd like to call a question on reconsideration.
Calling the question is in order if he wants to do it. Is there a second to calling the question? Brian seconds that. Then people can see what's going on and vote it down. All in favor of calling the question on the motion to reconsider? Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Opposed? 6. That passes 8-6 to call the question. So the motion is in front of us now whether to reconsider this resolution. Discussion is out of order, I'm afraid. All in favor of reconsidering the resolution, please raise your hand. All in favor of reconsidering. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9. 5-9, that fails. Julie.
For the record, I would like to say that what Joe said was raised was a reasonable question, but what Joe didn't seem to remember, if he knew it at all, is that Dwight, at the committee level, had told us that, in fact, we asked him, do we have to act on this now? Isn't it premature? He said, we'll have to pass it again. This is just sort of getting things lined up, but when we actually apply, we will pass this again.
Then
the
we'll
deadline
fix the
is not there. So this whole concern about undoing a grant is bogus.
Well, then we'll fix the language when we apply. Carol?
Yeah, for the record, I also just want to indicate that I chair the committee that this came out of. I moved this resolution, I believe, on the floor, and my understanding of what happened way back was that Dooley's amendment was going to refer to both of those, and I think that a simple replaying of the tape would have showed that, and we haven't given our staff the opportunity to do that. We spent more time with more people than if we'd just revisited it in a different manner. I'm very displeased at how this has played out, and it may seem like a small change. I think we made a real mountain out of a molehill that could have been simply corrected.
Mike.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
There's a second. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you all.